How does it happen? How do we transform the darkness into light? Step by step. No wisdomtainment, but we're going to go up. We're going to raise the energy each time because the sources are going to get more and more and more provocative and exciting and kind of completely gorgeously wild. Step three. Watch it carefully. Step three. How do we do it? What's the mechanism of transformation? We've talked about engaging the dark side. We've talked about engaging the shadow. We've talked about, right, not thrusting forward, but receiving, being a Kabbalist, right, about the nukva, about the feminine archetype that speaks, right, to the beauty beast, right, that kisses, right, the frog into a prince, right, that doesn't slay the dragon, but invites and engages the snake in conversation. We've talked about the notion of snake being numerical value messiah. We've talked about the path of the dragon and the path of the snake. The snake path, the dragon path, are called by the Kabbalists, right, the path of the postmodern, as it were, spiritual movement, right? What our generation is about being able to engage the darkness and transform it, about moving beyond the old binary system, trying to touch my inner trickster and darkness, and from that darkness, find the core essence of my light. And anyone who doesn't enter that darkness remains a pallid and pale light. To shine, right, to be alive, right, to hold energy, right, to transform, you have to touch the darkness. You have to engage, right, the shadow in a profound and real and powerful way. So how does it happen? What is the mechanism, right, that allows us to touch, to engage the darkness, and to move it towards transformation? So I want to read to you just four lines from Rilke, great, great poet, who writes, "Perhaps all the dragons of our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us once beautiful and brave. Perhaps everything terrible is in its deepest being something that needs our love." Something that needs our love. Here's the Kabbalistic suggestion. In the Zohar, in the section that talks about the way of the dragon, there's four incredible words. How do you walk the path of the dragon? How do you walk the way of the snake? I'll read you the original Aramaic text. Bechavivuta talia milta. Bechavivuta talia milta. Direct translation, it all depends on love. It all depends on love. Love is the agent force which transforms the darkness into light. What does Peter Pan want to do? What does Peter Pan want to do? He wants to stay young forever. What is he looking for at the opening of Peter Pan? What's he looking for? His shadow, right? He's looking for his shadow. And who can show his shadow on to Peter Pan? Wendy. Wendy. Do you follow? Do you begin to see how the archetype kind of flows through culture? And it's Wendy who speaks to the dragon. It's Wendy who converses and engages, right, the dragon in dialogue. Wendy can sew Peter Pan's shadow on. And if Peter Pan is going to achieve depth and maturity, if he's going to move from his childlike gorgeous state to deep and profound and mature adulthood, he must sew his shadow on. And it's possible to reach 90 years old and never engage my shadow and never shadow dance. And it's only touching the Wendy moment inside of him, touching the Chava moment who dialogues with the snake, that will allow Peter Pan to sew his shadow. So let's dance together for a moment. Peter Pan and Wendy, Chava speaking to the snake, the Beauty and the Beast, Star Wars and her reworked sword. What does love do? Love is able somehow to transform the darkness into light. What is love's power? What does it do? How does it do it, right? What's its inner mechanism? How does it operate? What's the nature of its transformative power? And I want to make three simple suggestions, but I think they're critical for us. They're at least critical for me. Number one, to be loved is to be seen. To be loved is to be seen. The most essential need a human being has is to be seen. Remember Judah and Tamar? The great Judah and Tamar story. Judah who meets Tamar, his daughter-in-law, who dresses up as a prostitute and seduces him by the side of the road in the book of Genesis. So if you remember the story, if you don't, I'll remind you, right? Tamar is Judah's daughter-in-law. And Tamar deserves Judah's son, Shelah, to become her husband. And for reasons which we won't explore now, Judah misperceives Tamar, holds Tamar responsible incorrectly for the death of his first two children. He's unable to see Tamar. So when we're unable to be perceived and seen by those closest to us, what do? We dress up in masks. We act out in all sorts of ways, crying out to be seen. And so Tamar dresses up as the prostitute and seduces Judah by the side of the road because she wants so desperately to be seen. And if we want to be seen and we're not, we'll put on all sorts of masks to get the attention of those closest to us. So to love is to see. Love is not an emotion. Emotion is the result of loving. And follow in Herzog zu. Let's be together for a second. Emotion is the result of loving. Love at its core in Hebrew thought is not an emotion. It's a powerful idea. Love is not an emotion. How do you know love is not an emotion? Because love is a commandment. There's a command, but there's a biblical, mystical command to love. How do you command an emotion? Can't command emotions. So what is love? What's love? What is love at its core? What's the essence of loving? This is a great mystical text, beautiful text. Chatan v'kala itgalia d'shchinta. The bride and the groom reveal the Shechina. They reveal the goddess, the God in each other. You've ever been at a wedding? What happens at a wedding, right? The caterer works, caterer doesn't work, the drinks, the this, the that, who cares, right? At a wedding, there's a moment as they're walking down the aisle. Forget about everything else. There's a moment where if you're there and you're present and you're on the inside, your heart just opens, right? There's that one moment, the whole wedding, the entire thing is that moment. We spend so much time, right, on all the peripheries of the wedding that we miss that moment. Right, when I got married in Jerusalem with my wife, Chayla, right, I won't tell the whole story, I'll just tell you a moment of it. We didn't quite have time to prepare a wedding. We were kind of busy, we were recording the first television season, Chaya was writing, and so we said, you know, we didn't get invitations. We just sent out an email and said, we're getting married. It was very simple. I did also mention it on the radio show, right? And I said something about it someplace on television, maybe, right? But, you know, we just told the caterer, we said, listen, no meals, just get like a few $1,000 of food, put it on a table in the middle. We told the band, get up there, play. Okay, that's all we did. Set up a chuppah. Thousands of people came. It was an incredible night in Jerusalem. Right, no caterer, no organized, no mess. We danced till 5 in the morning. Right? There was like an hour of reggae and an hour of rock and an hour of chassidut and an hour of jazz. Right, and it was kind of this just incredible, incredible, incredible night. And my wife and I, and for so many people, my wife and I have to stay married forever for one simple reason. So many people kind of just had such a great night. We just feel it'd be such a disappointment for everybody. So we try and be very good to each other, right? But do you hear it, right? In other words, it's about, there's a moment in the wedding where you hear it, you feel it, you drop inside. That's what happens in meditation. Meditation is the same thing. It usually doesn't work, little secret, but there's a moment where you drop inside. That's a wedding. That moment is called the bride and groom reveal the Shechina. They reveal the God and goddess in each other. How does it work? What does that mean? How does that revelation take place? Is it a kind of mystical cacophony? Gorgeous words that mean little? What does it mean? It means as follows, and it's so simple, it's so clear, it's so beautiful. The bride sees something in the groom. She sees him in his infinite specialness in a way that no one else was able to see him. Not even his parents, which is part of the tension between in-laws, right, and daughter or son. Because the claim of new love is a claim of perception. Love is a perception, right? The bride reveals in the groom a dimension of infinite gorgeousness that no one else was able to see in that groom. Do you ever hear, like when friends get married, Tom is marrying Sally. Can you believe it? How could Sally possibly marry Tom? Is she out of her mind? Right? But actually, she's right and we're wrong. Because she sees something in Tom She loves him. She sees something of his infinite gorgeousness, of his infinite specialness that no one else is quite able to see. She reveals the Shekhinah, the goddess, the divine force that courses through Tom. And Tom, of course, reveals the goddess, the divine force that courses through Sally. Right? Love is a perception, right, of the infinite specialness in other. To love is to see through God's eyes. That's what it means to be a lover. To be a lover is to see through God's eyes. Okay? You hear it?